This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. Technology seems to advance by leaps and bounds each year, with companies forever introducing innovative new devices. As Glennis Board reports, some students at West Virginia University are getting to work with a cutting-edge product from Google that could change the way we think about computers.
Google Glass. It's a new computer right out of a James Bond film or a science fiction novel. You wear it like you wear glasses, but you peer at the world with technologically reinforced eyes, like Iron Man without the suit. Maybe the suit will come next, but in the meantime, Google Glass is being tested by thousands of people, including students at West Virginia University. Professor Mary Kay McFarland got wind that Google was looking for glass explorers, and now she's incorporating the technology into her classrooms.
I think somebody was saying these will be coming out soon, and they showed the trailer and they had for everything they could do. And I thought, that's the end of the world for me.
McFarland remembers hearing about Google Glass for the first time.
The idea that you would walk around with a constant flow of information was just overwhelming to me when I first saw them. I thought, that's terrible. I need to be away from information for a while.
McFarland says this coming from a journalist's point of view, considering all the new required avenues of information that need to be navigated, monitored, curated, and contributed to in this bold new era of electronic communication. Facebook, Twitter, Hootsuite, Instagram, LinkedIn. Now this, Google Glass, and all the power that comes with it. What might those powers be, you ask? McFarland explains that basically you're wirelessly tethered to your smartphone, so instead of burying your head in your lap, you can walk around, head held high, taking pictures, rolling video, text messaging, calling someone, sharing what you see live, getting directions and following them, and of course you can look up whatever you want online. And all of this with voice commands, or with a flick, tap, or nod.
It's really responsive to questions like, do I need a sweater today? And it'll give you the weather. They've sort of thought about making mental leaps of the kinds of questions you would ask. You might say, you know, okay, Glass, I'm hungry, and it'll just list all the restaurants in the area.
McFarland also points out that the design is pretty intelligent. The screen that you look through, which projects whatever you're looking at onto the world in front of you, well, it hovers just above your eyebrow so as not to actually obstruct your vision. McFarland is one of about 8,000 of these so-called glass explorers who responded to a call for proposals to test the device. She explains that once chosen, testers had to go to New York, San Francisco, or Los Angeles to one of the Google offices to pick the devices up and get an explanation of how to use them. So off she went to New York.
It was very simple, as I was just playing with them, to take pictures of the people sleeping across from me across the airplane aisle or in the waiting area. And I thought, you know, if you had a camera out here, you would be very obvious that that's what you were doing and people would shy away or say, you know, I don't want my picture taken. But it just looks like I'm fiddling with my glasses.
Enter the elephant in the room.
It just changes the complexion of life as we know it out on the street if you can be being filmed all the time without your knowledge and have pictures taken of you without your knowledge. So I think most people are excited about the glass because they think, oh, it would be like wearing a computer around. I can just ask it questions and get answers. And that is absolutely true. But what they haven't considered are all the implications of privacy and that something that records and then uploads directly to Google, who has the capacity to do facial recognition.
These are ideas that McFarland is introducing along with the devices in her journalism classes at West Virginia University.
This is not a new issue. However, the technology makes the invasion of privacy possible on levels that it probably wasn't before.
But McFarland is embracing the technology nonetheless, and students are eager to do the same. She's asking students to come up with journalism and documentary projects where, instead of recording their subjects, they're recording their subjects' point of view.
One student in my multimedia reporting class he's in the WVU marching band, the Pride of West Virginia. And so he actually used them to tell the story of game day from the band's perspective as they go out on the field and what they see from the field and how the formations look.
McFarland also points to examples like a student who wants to explore the effects of sequestration on Head Start, and a student who's interested in the implications of possible marijuana legislation in the state.
In those stories, they'll have to find the people for whom those issues matter. And then we can talk about the implications of actually seeing life through those people, through the eyes of, you know, the people who are living through those issues.
Meanwhile, McFarland is also exploring project ideas of her own. She wants to explore what this latest breakthrough in communication might reveal about the oldest form of communication, body language. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
And you can see the video produced with Google Glass from the perspective of the WVU Marching Band on our website, wvpublic.org. National School Lunch Day provided McKinley Middle School and Kanawha County an opportunity to highlight the state's farm-to-school program, which encourages county school systems to serve West Virginia-grown produce and other products for their meals. While administrators say students aren't getting those fresh products as often as they'd like, Ashton Mara reports they're working to make the program grow.
Up a small set of stairs and to the left sits the cafeteria at McKinley Middle School. But you don't need the secretary's directions to find it. At lunchtime, you can hear the chatter of students as soon as you walk in the school's front door. McKinley houses about 350 sixth through eighth graders who, in 20-minute shifts of about 50 or so, file into the small cafeteria, fill their trays, and sit down at tables to eat.
I'm usually scared of the school food.
Reviews that are not so uncommon from your average middle schooler about what's being served in his or her cafeteria. But this lunch was slightly different.
I like the apples. They actually have flavor to them this time.
Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. It's kind of really nice to have all freshly grown stuff from around St. Albans.
Sixth grader Chase Casto sat with his classmates and enjoyed a cheeseburger on a whole wheat bun, wheat that was grown in Preston County, along with apples from Berkeley, lettuce from Putnam, ice cream from Kanawha, and Brussels sprouts from Upshur County. That's right, Brussels sprouts. Students at McKinley Middle weren't just eating their normal Wednesday afternoon lunch. No, they were eating a lunch prepared from scratch with West Virginia products as a part of the State Department of Education's Farm to School program.
We started this initiative about 3 years ago.
Richard Goff is the executive director of the Office of Child Nutrition at the department,
where we showcase local growers, local producers. And today's menu highlighted just locally sourced food and grown here in West Virginia.
The program is similar to the farm-to-table movement becoming popular across the country. It's about supporting local producers and providing them a stable market to sell their products. And county school systems are a very stable market. In the last school year, more than $350,000 was spent on local products used in schools in 30 counties across the state. And Diane Miller, the child nutrition director for Kanawha County Schools and organizer of the McKinley event, says the goal is to get that number to grow.
Farm to school for me is not just a one-time event. What I want to do is find longevity of the program so that I can say every single day at every single school in Kanawha, we're going to have something fresh from a local farmer. But I have to find other farmers to be able to bring that quantity into Kanawha County.
Finding the farmers seems to be the biggest challenge, but Miller says there's an even bigger reward. Outside of the help the school systems can bring to the local economy, students are eating fresher, healthier foods, and perhaps more importantly, liking them.
The amount of work was amazing, but it was today you reap the benefits of it. To see these kids' trays and to see the kids happy and just kind of excited about their lunch.
As for Chase, he likes the idea of tasting new foods.
I'm going to try this. I haven't tried this before.
Go for it. Tell me how it is.
Potato salad and all, Chase and the kids at McKinley Middle seemed satisfied as they dumped their trays and returned to class, as Diane Miller said, with bellies fed and ready to learn. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in St. Albans.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:43. some scattered morning fog, light rain, and misty rain likely throughout the day today. Wind gusts could reach 30 miles per hour. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s today. Mostly cloudy overnight with a chance of rain or drizzle. Some clearing later with overnight lows in the 40s. And mostly sunny on Friday, but there is a chance of rain. It'll be a little cooler with temperatures reaching the 50s and 60s tomorrow.
Support provided by the WVU Mary Babb Randolph Cancer Center, West Virginia's Cancer Center, providing patient care, research, and community outreach online at WVUhealthcare.com.
The 30th annual West Virginia International Film Festival opens tonight in Charleston with a film entitled Dirty Wars, which traces the rise of the Joint Special Operations Command, a secret and elite U.S. fighting force. All films are being shown at the Capitol Theater on Summer Street in Charleston. The festival features 12 films from the U.S. and around the world. Festival Vice President Emmett Pepper can't wait to show you two of his favorites.
I tell you, I mean, the ones that I've seen a lot of these already, the ones that I think that I'm most excited about talking about is Holy Motors, is one of the most truly surrealistic films. It's completely real looking, but the things that are happening could never happen in real life, and it's one of those films that that I think is destined to be a cult classic, and it's already, yeah, I want to go see it again because I still don't really. I think I've wrapped my brain around it yet.
Sounds intriguing. What's it about?
It's about an individual who in Paris, who when you first see him, he's looks like a family man headed off to work, and he's got a private limo that he goes into, and then you see he changes into a homeless person, and then he goes through change after change after change in this limousine, living these existences, and. I didn't really know why he was doing that, and I think maybe people can come up with their own theories as to what the motivations are.
Is this a French film?
That one is French, yes. There's another really great film from Palestine, one of the few Palestinian, I think the only Palestinian film that's been nominated for an Academy Award called Five Broken Cameras. It tells the story of how these five cameras that this amateur filmmaker had got broken, and it was because in his village it was very close to some Israeli settlements, and so this is an insight into an area we hear about on the news all the time here on this station and others, but you don't see it firsthand, and it's hard to know exactly what it's like, and it was a really, really powerful film.
Why should people attend the International Film Festival?
This is our 30th annual festival this year, and this is one of the great views into the outside world, and it has been for the past 30 years, and this is a way to see the world in a way that, going on the internet or listening to the radio doesn't necessarily capture, and you can actually see it and feel it and hear people's stories.
That's Emmett Pepper, the vice president of the West Virginia International Film Festival, which opens tonight and continues until Saturday, October 26th. While the International Film Festival gets underway in Charleston, in another part of the state, a man is working to bring film back to his small town. As Beneduccio reports, it's been a tough journey.
Russell Stover is trying to restore the Grand Theater in downtown Philippi to make it an attraction to cinema enthusiasts in the area. Stover says in that part of the state, it's very difficult for film lovers to go see movies.
I want to open, instead of just another theater showing new movies, I want to open what's called a revival theater. And as an independent revival theater, I could show pretty much whatever I want and pretty much whatever the people want to see. And that's something that isn't done around here. If you want to see a documentary, you've either got to go to Pittsburgh or maybe Morgantown if you're lucky, or wait for it to come out on disc. And even then, you've got to wait for it to show up on Amazon.com or Netflix or something.
Stover would like to screen older movies at the theater, like films from Alfred Hitchcock and other iconic movie makers. But getting it open won't be easy. In other parts of the state, older theaters have been demolished, like the two downtown theaters that used to be in Fairmont. Others are vacant and basically abandoned, like the Warner Theater in Morgantown. But there is at least one example of what Stover is trying to accomplish in Shepherdstown, where a restored historic theater shows movies and hosts concerts. Stover is certain a restored grand theater like the one in Shepherdstown will be successful.
But I've seen too many of these wonderful old places turn into parking lots. And a place like Philippi that really appreciates its history, that's something you want to save. With the way the college is expanding, I'm surprised other businesses haven't moved into Philippi.
Stover is trying to raise the money for the theater, but he's far away from that goal. He is hoping he'll be successful in bringing cinema back to Philippi. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.